you caring for an aging loved one? Are you a senior searching for answers? Welcome to Senior Care Live, a program dedicated to you, providing information, education, and resources for seniors and their caregivers. And now, America's Senior Care Consultant, Steve Kuecker.
Welcome to Senior Care Live. I'm Steve Kuecker, your Senior Care Consultant, and I really appreciate you tuning in today. We have a wonderful program on tap with our friends from Kansas City Hospice and Palliative Care. David Wiley, he's the President and CEO of Kansas City Hospice and Palliative Care, as well as Dr. Iman Williams-Christians. She's the Director of Grief Programs, and Karen Honholt, she's the Chief Development and Communications Officer, again, with Kansas City Hospice and Palliative Care. And David and Dr. Iman and Karen, welcome to Senior Care Live.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Great to be here today.
All right. Thank you. And David, today we're talking about a couple of really, really important topics, both mental health and grieving. So let's jump right in with the question, why is this significant to you at Kansas City Hospice? And why are we discussing this in the month of May in particular?
You know, Steve, May is National Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's been around a long time, actually, since the 40s. And so every May, we come together with millions of Americans to continue the tradition of promoting awareness and advocating for mental health and well-being of everyone. We also like to make folks aware of the resources available through our programs at Kansas City Hospice. You know, being able to maintain good mental health is essential to everyone's individual overall health and well-being, and mental health conditions are common, manageable, and treatable. Some statistics from mhnational.org indicate that 1 in 5 people will experience a mental health condition in any given year, and everyone faces challenges in life that can impact their mental health. So on top of that, about half of Americans will meet the criteria for a diagnosable mental health conditions sometime in their lives, with symptoms starting by age 14 for the majority of people. And that's how important this is.
Well, 1 in 5, I mean, that's a big number. And, you know, we have some of these issues in my own family, and they're not major issues, but they are issues. And it can be significant, and good news, it's also treatable most of the time, I think, for most folks. So the world is just constantly changing, you know, for the better or worse, and it can be overwhelming to deal with everything that's going on around you. Is there more that you can share about Mental Health Awareness Month, David?
You know, Steve, we can, and I'd like to introduce Dr. Iman Williams-Christians. She does an excellent job leading our grief support programming for our organization, and she's going to speak to more of the nuances about mental health and where we've been and where we're going.
All right.
All right. Thank you, David. You're right. This is an important topic and something we should shine a light on. Life can be challenging, but every day shouldn't feel hard or out of your control. If it does, there is help. Knowing when to turn to our friends, families, and coworkers when you're struggling with life's challenges can help improve your overall mental health. Loneliness, current events, technology, and social drivers have an impact on mental well-being of Americans, but there are protective measures to help prevent mental health conditions from developing and to keep symptoms manageable and from getting any worse. So navigating uncertainty and fear about what is happening in the world and what the future holds can feel overwhelming, but the good news is no one has to suffer in silence. There is hope. In today's tech-filled world, screens can dominate our daily lives and impact our mental well-being. What we choose to look at and how much time we spend on our devices really matters and can make a big difference on how we feel.
And Dr. Iman, you just hit one of my hot buttons. I kind of preach this to my kids. I even preach it to my mom, and I think they're tired of me talking about that, but it's 100% true.
Yes, absolutely. It is something that all of us struggle with, and we try to help our kids with as well. But yeah, taking a break from those social devices is really, really important. And it's common to feel like no one understands what you're going through, but reaching out can be the first step in improving your mental health. Loneliness can take a real toll on your mental and physical health, and it's important to find meaningful ways to connect with others. There are many ways to take action, big and small, you know, whether it is reaching out to a mental health practitioner, whether it is talking to an important friend in your life, all of those things are important.
And Dr. Iman, not to have this turn into let's hammer our devices and social media and all that kind of stuff, but you talk about connecting with other people physically and just genuinely connecting in this world of likes and friends is so surface level that it just we're lacking this the socialization and just the one-on-one human contact and real friendships, not a Facebook friendship. And it's a huge, huge problem that contributes to all of this. I'm 100% sure of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that. And I would also say that those I work with who are experiencing mental health issues or are experiencing grief, for instance, really do crave that social interaction. They mm-hmm. want to be in person and meet with other people and commune. So speaking of grief, one of the things that really helps with grief is creating certain rituals to help you cope. An important element of mental and emotional health is coping with grief and loss, which is something we will all experience at some point in our lives. It accompanies one of life's most significant challenging transitions, the death of a loved one. A lot of times death is of someone that we love or a significant person in our life, whether a parent, spouse, grandparent, or friend, is really, really difficult. And we're here to help them with those experiences. So although grief is a common human experience, it hasn't been widely recognized as a mental health need. And as a result, there is a lack of experience among traditional mental health providers and providing specialized counseling for grief. So the great thing that KCH does is we provide grief support to our hospice families, and it continues for a full year following the death of a loved one. And we also have our Solace House Community Center for Grief and Healing that serves youth as young as 3 and adults of all ages with individual and family counseling and peer support groups. And unlike those who receive KCH Hospice Bereavement Support, which typically follows an expected death due to serious illness, individual families have often experienced sudden losses or unexpected deaths like accidents or other things. And at Solace House, we have counselors who are trained to provide highly effective therapy to children who are struggling with concerning symptoms of grief. Timely support for these kids and their families is really important in teaching them healthy social emotional coping skills and preventing grief from negatively affecting their mental health and well-being throughout their lifetime.
All right. And Dr. Iman, as you said, the impact of grief on someone's mental health can just be immense. And I'm interested to hear more about how these rituals can help us through that.
Yeah, absolutely. Rituals are really important, whether it is just taking the day and remembering your loved one, sharing stories. And there are all kinds of things. And one of the cool things I get to do as working on the grief support team is I get to talk to families and talk about the different ways that they could celebrate and remember their loved ones. So rituals are absolutely an important aspect of coping with our grief.
All right. And you had mentioned earlier that Kansas City Hospice provides the grief support up to a full year after the death of a loved one. I think that is so significant, David, because I lost my dad, and I know that you lost your mother, and there's an entire year of I had to walk out of the card shop on Father's Day. I couldn't buy mm-hmm. I wasn't able to buy my dad a card, and it never dawned on me until I walked in, and I was just completely blown away. And so you have and his birthday and the holidays, you have a first everything for a whole year. So having that support available for an entire year, I think is just critical, and I think it's great that you do that.
Yeah, the team does a great job, and you know, we reach out immediately upon right after the death of the loved one, and then we provide mailings and materials, really create a plan of care for the bereaved and to ensure that they have what they need throughout the year. And that could range from phone calls to telehealth visits to in-person meetings or other groups. So the team does just an excellent job.
All right. So if this is catching your attention and you're like, you know what, I need to look into this and look into maybe some of these services for mental health and for grief support and everything offered by Kansas City Hospice, here's their phone number. I would encourage you to give it a call, 816-363-2600. That's 816-363-2600. Or you could go online. It's an excellent website, kchospice.org. And now the Senior Care Live question of the week. Which of these is considered a grief ritual? A, lighting a candle every day at the same time. B, taking a walk around the block, thinking of special memories of when you walked together. C, getting a tattoo. D, visiting your loved one's grave. Or E, all of the above. What do you think?
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, visit seniorcarelive.com. We'll have more with Steve coming up next.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, visit seniorcarelive.com. All right, back to the Senior Care Live question of the week. Which of these is considered a grief ritual? A, lighting a candle every day at the same time. B, taking a walk around the block, thinking of special memories of when you walked together. C, getting a tattoo. D, visiting your loved one's grave. Or E, all of the above. And the answer is... E, all of the above. But I got to say, what's up with the tattoo? That caught me off guard a little bit. So.
Yeah. So a lot of individuals who come in to see us, they will actually choose as their ritual to take the ashes of their loved ones and incorporate it in their tattoo. So it'll always be a part of them.
That is a really cool idea. I never would have thought of it. And it seems like, now that you mention that, it seems like I heard about that here recently somewhere. I don't know, in the news or on social media, something. So anyway, that's a really cool idea. So I'm glad you clarified that. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, getting a tattoo. So, all right. Today we're visiting with David Wiley, Karen Honholt, and Dr. Iman from Kansas City Hospice and Palliative Care. And if you want to reach out to the great team at KC Hospice, it's 816-363-2600 or online at kchospice.org. And before the break, we discussed a lot of excellent information about recognizing the impact of grief on mental health. And can you tell us more about how Kansas City Hospice can help someone who's dealing with their grief, Dr. Iman?
Absolutely. So one of our important offerings is the Solace House Center for Grief and Healing, where we have several different programs that provide a varying degrees of support depending on the person's needs. So we have facilitated peer groups where kids participate in age-appropriate curriculum with their peers. We have individual and family counseling, which includes specialized counseling from licensed clinical social workers trained to assist with complicated grief, as well as trauma and loss. We also have grief support camps for children and families with children during the summer. And our camps are fun. We have recreational activities, creative opportunities to foster healing among family members who have lost a loved one.
All right. And it sounds like finding ways to remember and honor loved ones is a big part of coping with loss. And David, is there anything else that you would like to highlight?
You know, as Dr. Iman mentioned, grief is universal, something we all have or will experience in our lifetimes. And the grief support services offered by Kansas City Hospice are often at no cost to participants, thanks to generous donors, and services are open to the greater Kansas City community. If space is available, anyone who's experienced the death of someone important to them can register for a group like the ones that we've described, request a camp application, or orientation at Solace House for support group and or a specialized counseling service. You know, we believe that our grief support services are valuable for grievers, and we want to provide support for those in our community that could benefit.
All right. And what's the best way to contact you if listeners are interested in more information about mental health or Kansas City Hospice services?
You know, we actually have just launched a brand new website, which is simple to navigate, which we're excited about. And it's a perfect resource for someone experiencing grief and those facing end-of-life issues, which is, as you mentioned earlier, at kchospice.org. You can always call our main number if you're comfortable speaking to someone, which is 816-363-2600. For some of the mental health resources we mentioned today, MHANational.org is another amazing resource of information. And importantly, everyone should also know that seeking professional help for your mental health when self-help efforts aren't working is a sign of strength, not weakness, and you don't have to go through these struggles alone.
I love that you have so many resources, and I know that we have some things coming up. And Karen Hunholt, again, Chief Development Officer and Communications Officer of Kansas City Hospice, I would love to hear from you on this whole subject matter.
Yeah, thank you. So we have a ceremony that we conduct every year. It's called Circle of Lights, and it's another way that people can use. Dr. Mon talked earlier about all of the different ways that we can grieve and those the comfort those rituals provide. This is really a ritual for the community, and it's one that a lot of folks in Kansas City, they have adopted as their own. And you know, many people, we've done it in person, and over the last few years we've added a virtual component to it, and people can find a lot of comfort and peace in the, you know, the collective glow of remembrance. It's really a unique and meaningful way to remember and celebrate the life of someone special to you. And in addition to fostering a strong sense of community, the benefits of memorial candle lighting ceremonies extend to the spiritual and emotional well-being of our participants. And the act of candle lighting can be therapeutic, allowing someone to focus on the positive memories and life-affirming moments they shared with the person being celebrated. So we actually host this out at the Mill Creek Park in just off the Country Club Plaza. People can come out the evening of May 21st. It's always the Tuesday before Memorial Day, and come in person. And we provide actual physical luminaries that people can light. And we have a beautiful program that's planned, and people can remember their loved ones. And I do think it's important for people to know that they do not have to have been served by Kansas City Hospice to participate in this. So if they have someone that they want to remember that they lost recently or many years ago that wasn't necessarily on our service, they can absolutely participate in this program, both virtually or in person at the park. And we'll light that candle. We'll have it's a non-denominational ceremony, so it's not faith-based to any religion. We do have some great readings as part of that, and music. And it's just a really beautiful, beautiful way to remember our loved ones and gather as a community to do that.
I'd like to just highlight the point that this is a beautiful, impactful, deeply meaningful service, but it's for the entire community. You did not have to be affiliated or associated with receiving care from Kansas City Hospice.
Correct. It can be anybody. In fact, I remember I lost my mom nearly 20 years ago. We weren't even living in Kansas City, but I remember her every year in this ceremony. And it really is meaningful and just brings a lot of comfort and peace.
I do the same thing with my dad
every year.
So, yep.
You never forget, and it's a great way to do that. Another thing that you can do, if you're not in Kansas City or unable to come out for any reason, you can actually go to our website at kchospice.org/COL, and you can request a virtual candle. That you can actually light a candle, a virtual candle, and you can request a physical luminary at that time. There's no charge to do this. We do welcome, if you would like to make a gift in memory of your loved one or in honor of anyone, we certainly make that available and appreciate any support that people can provide.
And I'll tell you, I do that every year, and I do make a donation. And and the online, the virtual experience is really, really wonderful as well, if you cannot show up. So David Wiley, Dr. Iman, and Karen Hunholt with Kansas City Hospice and Palliative Care. Thank you so much for being here today, and thank you for all of the incredible work that you do and all of the support that you provide for your own patients and families, as well as our entire community. We're really lucky to have you here in Kansas City.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much.
All right, I'll have more coming up next.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. Have a question? Visit SeniorCareLive.com. Stick around. We'll have more with Steve coming up next.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For podcasts of the program, go to seniorcarelive.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And we have, if you go to the website, I've got icons for all of the different platforms, and I think we're on more than that. It's a bunch of them. So choose one, subscribe, and listen up, share with all of your family and friends. Spread the good news of Senior Care Life. How about that? So, all right, I'm going to shift gears and talk about one of my favorite days. It's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. National Nurses Day is coming up Monday, May the 6th, and it happens every year on May the 6th. This year's theme for Nurses Day is Nurses Make a Difference, and oh boy, do they ever. And it's celebrated annually on May 6th to raise awareness of the important roles nurses play in society and marks the beginning of National Nurses Week, which ends May the 12th, which happens to be the birthday of Florence Nightingale. How about that? So a little bit of a background. May the 12th, the final day of Nurses Week, is the birthday of Florence Nightingale. The English nurse became known as the founder of professional nursing, especially due to her pioneering work during the Crimean War of 1853 to 1856. And due to her, this is pretty cool, due to her habit of making rounds at night, Nightingale became known as the Lady with the Lamp. And National Nurses Week was first observed October in 1954. The 100th anniversary of Nightingale's mission to Crimea, May the 6th, was introduced as the date for the observance in 1982. All right, so, you know, nurses go to work every single day to ensure patients get all of the care that they need and the comfort and the compassion they deserve. And the complex nature of nursing just continues to be physically and emotionally draining. And yet nurses carry on providing the quality patient care and moving the profession forward, which reinforces the importance of appreciating all of the nurses in our country. And then I have an article here by Bonnie Barnes, co-founder of the DAISY Foundation. Nurses need to be emotionally, psychologically, and morally refueled regularly to enable them to resist burnout and its many negative impacts, such as distress. And that's no kidding. It's a pressure cooker, or it can be. Right? Nurses are, and this is, I think, the big takeaway. And it's not a surprise, but it's important to talk about it. Nurses are refueled when they know they've made a difference in the life of a patient or a family member, especially when they were unaware of the difference they made. And again, I don't think this is a big surprise. Nurses are ranked at the top of the list for the most respected professions in America. And guess what? They have held that distinction for over 20 years now. And that's just amazing. And of course, Nurses Day has a very special place in my heart for personal reasons. Let me just brag just for a minute about my wife, Susan. She's a registered nurse, and I have to say she is phenomenal. I'm not saying that because she's my wife. I'm saying that because she is phenomenal. All right. All of her patients and families just love her. She pours herself out to them. She tends to all of their needs. She's a very giving, loving, and patient person. I don't know how I ended up with her. I got really, really lucky. Let me say that. But she always has a smile. She's deeply caring about her patients and her family. She goes the extra mile. She'll stay till 7 or 7:30 at night, even though their doctor's office is officially closed by 5 o'clock. She returns the call. She communicates with her patients. And I asked, you know, why do you do that? Can you just wait until the next day? Right? And she says, Steve, if it was me, waiting for a diagnosis or the result of a lab or other test results, I would want to know as soon as possible. So I take the time to call them, and I hope this would be done for me as well if I'm the patient. So this is just one of the many reasons that they all give her just the highest ratings and compliments and very positive comments. They just love her. And if you see her working with her patients, you would absolutely understand why. And then I'd like to invite my friend and our producer, a phenomenal producer, Mr. Sean Floyd, in on the conversation. And Sean, your wife Jenna is a nurse. Tell us about what she does and how she does that. She has a demanding job.
Yeah, she does. She works as a critical care nurse in the ER for Children's Mercy.
Oh, boy.
Here in Overland Park.
Okay, so, I just heard all the stress right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa, yeah.
So, I mean, you take the stress of an emergency room situation with adults, but you're dealing with that same stress for a child.
Yeah, and critical care, no less.
And
so
critical care.
She's dealing with the toughest of situations for children. That in the emergency room, that would be some high pressure right there.
It's not only high pressure, but it's high emotional to where you really have to keep your emotions in check, because she has told me some things, at least within the legalities of what she can share.
Sure.
She's told me some stories that have broken my heart and have made me upset with humanity and
yep.
other things.
Yeah.
But she has to endure that because she's a professional.
And she has to take care of those kids.
Exactly. That's priority number one, is the level of care that those kids receive. And she definitely has a nurse's heart. She's very compassionate. She's phenomenal at what she does. And why she married me, like you said earlier, why she married me, I have no idea.
We both got pretty lucky on that one.
I think the good Lord, that whatever it was, that he just continues to bless more of it for me. So that way I don't lose out on the blessing. But yeah, I don't know how she does it, but she does. And she's phenomenal. And I'm very blessed and very lucky to have her in my life. And I not only love and respect what she does, but I love and respect her.
Well, absolutely. And you talk all the time about your wife, and she just sounds amazing. And one thing I've noticed, maybe not all nurses, but I would have to say the vast, vast majority, they are all loving, caring people, and they want to help.
And they love wine.
Oh,
this is one thing I've come to find out, is that they love wine, too.
Well, wine is good, but after the shift.
Oh, of course. Yeah, after the shift. Yeah, yeah. No. Not on duty. Let me stress that. It's not on duty.
Well, and if you think about what these nurses went, they were the front line during COVID.
Yes.
And we could probably talk about, 2 hours about that. But
yes.
I don't know about Jenna, but in the very beginning, we didn't know what this thing was. And Susan would come home, take off her scrubs, because we didn't know if she's dragging some horrible thing back.
Yep.
We didn't know. And so she would take off her scrubs in the garage,
mm-hmm.
and then we would have some clothing for her to change into. She would walk in and drop her scrubs and everything in the washer and wash them and disinfect everything for a long time, until we figured out we didn't really need to do that.
Yeah.
Did your wife have to cut? Did she go through some of the similar concerns early on?
She was actually furloughed during COVID, but her furlough was only for a month.
Okay.
And then she was brought back on.
Gotcha.
So,
when in the beginning, in hospitals, you couldn't go into a hospital.
Yeah.
They were just trying to figure this out. And then it took them about a month, and then they got there. So,
well, and with schools being shut down at that time too, there weren't a lot of kids coming in due to any illnesses, due to any accidents on the playgrounds or anything like that. So, their census numbers really took a beating, and, unfortunately things happened, but, thank the good Lord that she was able to be brought back on in a very short period of time.
Yeah. I forgot about that furlough. So, Susan, they work in a really busy, primary care physician's office. And if you thought you had COVID symptoms, they had to let you in the back door.
Yep.
And you had to be seen in that last patient room in the back. And she was so exhausted every single day coming home. You talk about the heroes, the front line of the pandemic. We're talking about the nurses.
Absolutely. 100%. And my wife's also a breast cancer survivor, and she's the toughest person I know.
Yeah, that is absolutely amazing. So let me just say this. So to my wife, Susan, to Sean's wife, Jenna, and all of the awesome, incredible, and fantastic nurses out there, just keep doing what you're doing. You are important. You are recognized. You are loved. And as the theme this year says, you absolutely 100%, you do make a difference. And we appreciate all of you so very much. Happy Nurses Day.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. To contact Steve or a guest on his show, visit SeniorCareLive.com. We'll have more coming up.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. Have a question? Visit SeniorCareLive.com. All right, so I'm going to shift gears and jump back into the topic of memory care. So let me answer the question, what is memory care? Because I have to say this term has been kind of beat up and misused and bantered about, and it's kind of a mess. So I like to just try to summarize everything and put my stamp on it, if you will, because I like my stamp best. How about that? So memory care is a special type of care for a resident with cognitive impairment. It's just as simple as that. Let me repeat that. Memory care is a special type of care for a resident with cognitive impairment. It's as simple as that. So who is this for? So memory care is going to be offered and needed by a resident with cognitive impairment. So typically it's going to be dementia or Alzheimer's or one of the various forms of dementia. It could be dementia as a result of Parkinson's disease. Could be dementia as a result of a stroke. Okay, but most of the time, it's straight dementia, one of the different forms of dementia, or Alzheimer's, which is the most recognizable form of dementia. That would be who it's for. So why would you need to move from general care, what I call general care, to memory care? Well, again, memory care is a special type of care for residents with cognitive impairment. So in part of the building, you could have a small area designated to provide memory care. So some of the features of memory care will be codes on the doors so that you don't walk out of the area, maybe walk outside and unintentionally put yourself in harm's way. They need to protect you from that. So you have codes on the doors. So you can leave the area, but you really need to be accompanied by someone just to make sure that, again, you don't unintentionally put yourself in harm's way. It's a smaller space on purpose. It's a smaller space because things can more easily become overwhelming and you may receive too much stimulation. So fewer residents, less stimulation, a 30-foot-long hallway is easier to deal with than a 100-foot-long hallway, et cetera, et cetera. Activity programming is really important. So do you think someone with dementia is going to be able to play bingo with you for 60 minutes? Let me answer that. No, they're not. So you might have bingo for 15 or 20 minutes. So you'll tend to have more activities for shorter periods of time because, again, Memory care is a special type of care for residents with cognitive impairment. You will typically have more staffing in the memory care area, and that's typically why you're going to see a little bit more expensive in the memory care area to reflect that staffing. The staff is specially trained. If this place is doing it right, they're going to have special training to anticipate sundowning, to be trained on redirection. They're going to anticipate all of these potential issues that come along with caring for someone with cognitive issues. So when you're going to need the memory care unit, the memory care neighborhood, the memory care program, whatever you want to call it, the number one reason that you or your loved one would be moved to quote-unquote memory care would be for an elopement risk. Now, it seems like a little bit of a silly term. Maybe a flight risk might be a little more user-friendly on the terminology. But the industry calls it an elopement risk, meaning the person may walk away. There are two levels of elopement risk. The lower level is referred to as wandering. So you have dementia, you're walking around, you're cruising around, you're not trying to cause any problems, but you look outside and you're like, hey, what's going on out there? So you go over, you walk outside, it's 0 degrees, it's 100 degrees, you walk out into traffic, and you don't have the ability to understand these are bad things. They could be dangerous to you. Okay, so that is the lower level of elopement risk. The higher level, a much more serious situation, is someone who is, quote, unquote, exit seeking. So again, someone with dementia, they're looking around. They're like, you know, this is a pretty nice place. The people here are pretty nice, but this isn't my house. This isn't where I live. I'm going home. And there they go. They're trying to leave the building, right? They are trying to open the door. They are trying to go outside because they're going to walk down the street. They're going to keep on walking until they get home. And they're not going to get home. They're just going to put themselves in harm's way. Okay? So that's why you have the codes on the doors. And again, this space is not prison. You can leave. You just need to be accompanied for your own safety and security. The number two reason that you or your loved one would need, quote unquote, the memory care neighborhood is overstimulation. So when you have dementia, you have less and less of an ability to deal with stimulation. So if you're out in the general care area of the building, there could be 100 residents coming and going, doing different things and clanking their silverware during dinner. And their people are talking and there's music going on. There's just stuff going on all over the place. And as you get further and further into that decline of dementia, it's easier and easier for you to become overstimulated. So when you get overstimulated, it's like you're just kind of winding up tight. And all of a sudden you snap and you become belligerent. You may be even aggressive. You may be shouting or screaming. You could even become combative. And you don't want that. No one wants that for you. And you can't do that around others. So that would be the number two reason that you would get a very quick ticket to memory care is overstimulation. If all of this sounds a little overwhelming, you're like, how are we going to do this? I would invite you to contact my firm, Senior Care Consulting. We can make this whole process very simple for you and handle all of it for you. 913-945-2800. Or online at seniorcareconsulting.com. We can definitely help you out. But hopefully this information has helped you in your current situation or your future situation as well. All right. I'm Steve Kuecker, and I wish you grace and peace. May God bless you and your family on this day and always. Join me next week, right here on Senior Care Live.